Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening, you're listening to Prison Pipeline. Tonight we're going to be talking with the creators of a new podcast called Incarceration, Leah Montang and Meredith Ruff. Welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks so much. So you've created a new podcast called Incarceration, and we're going to be playing some clips of that tonight and talking about your work. So first of all, would you please, each of you, introduce yourselves to us and then tell us a little bit about your new podcast?
Okay. I'm Leah. Hi. I'm a geographer, and I'm someone who's been involved in like left social movements for a real long time, mostly in the Puget Sound area, although right now I'm in Toronto for now. And I met Meredith in an organization called No New Washington Prisons, and we decided to make this podcast together after we went through a couple campaigns together where we ran up against the way that, the idea of improving care ended up salvaging a prison expansion project or a hospital expansion project or a jail expansion project.
Thanks a lot. My name again, Meredith. I got involved in No New Washington Prisons, where I met Leah because I was attending law school and there was a call to law students to fight the creation of a new women's prison in Washington State, which did not happen. So that was good.
Great. So you're both involved in different aspects of activism related to prisons and incarceration. How did you take the next step to becoming podcasters?
In a really amateurish way. I think, I don't know. Whose idea was it, Meredith?
It was your idea.
My idea? Yeah, I don't know. I think that maybe what was inspiring me was less the idea of like, I want to make a podcast, and more the idea of we need to look at this idea of, improving care leads to expansion a little bit more carefully, and we need to kind of deepen the conversation about that. I think for a long time we've known that improving care is a reformist reform, and that is leads to prison expansion, that is a familiar idea, but it felt like it was still hard for people to wrap their heads around it. It wasn't just at Western State Hospital where we came up against this barrier. I think of it as the care barrier.
Oh, great. Well, we're really, I'm really excited to hear some segments from the podcast and to hear you all talk about it. You've already produced 6 episodes. And what I'm really hoping to do tonight is really just hear from you about your new podcast and about all of the issues that you really care about, because this sounds like a really great podcast that people should check out. So, but before we go any further, can you tell people where can they find your podcast?
Well, it's called Incarceration, in-care-ceration. And we have it up, I think most places where you can get a podcast. So the big ones, the big corporations, and then the smaller platforms too.
The first clip that we'll play is from Christopher Carney, who is an attorney in Washington State.
what I've learned over the time that I've been doing this mm-hmm. is that it's really just one population of people who cycle through civil commitment placements mm-hmm. and the criminal legal system mm-hmm. and acute psychiatric care mm-hmm. and homeless shelters. Mm-hmm. So it's really primarily one group of people, and it's all but random as to which of those responses occurs when they hit a crisis point. And so it's just a question of who they came into contact first while they were in their crisis. They could end up in a civil commitment placement. They could end up getting arrested for any number of low-level offenses that result in lengthy incarcerations mm-hmm. and possibly being transported to the state hospital mm-hmm. for forensic treatment mm-hmm. for restoration, which I'll talk more about mm-hmm. what restoration means later. So it's all one group. So my clients are the same people mm-hmm. Who are being cycled repeatedly through mm-hmm. all of those systems.
Yeah.
The large-scale effects of all of us thinking, I wish I didn't have to see that. When we walk down the street and see encampments or see people who are talking to themselves or behaving strangely. Nobody likes seeing that, I think. And they're invisible when they're in an institution.
Yeah.
And if the deepest thinking that we do is that I don't want to see it, that's the problem solved then. Because I don't have to see it when they're in jail. I don't have to see it when they're in prison. I don't have to see them when they're in a psychiatric facility. And so the solution, intuitively, for a lot of people, including policymakers in this area, is just build more institutions so we can hide them.
I don't know. I mean, to me, he's just suggesting that we're expanding jails, hospitals, and prisons in order to deal with what we might call a surplus population, right? Mm-hmm. Like the people who aren't part of the productive economic system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's both they could end up in prison and call for prison expansion because we need more prison beds. But I think also something that we came across is that these hospitals or even certain programs have a lot of the same elements of being in prison. Like if you get sent to a state hospital or you're civilly committed, like you can't leave. And then you're still caught up in some sort of court process. Similar to what would happen if you were in the criminal system.
Right. And jail expansion is like the story of the 2010s and the 2020s. That's where our criminal punishment systems are expanding most rapidly. And I think that this interconnection between hospitals and jails is not focused on enough. Like we need to really think about this.
Great. Well, let's hear the second segment that you wanted to share for the show. What's this about?
Yeah, so I mean, this really, I'm going to do it, Leah. So when we're talking about like kind of our primary problem of our campaign was that we did not want them to expand the state hospital so that they could funnel more people eventually into the criminal legal system. And it was very difficult to talk to people and kind of build a coalition that was, you know, we don't want them to build this new hospital, because when people think of hospital, they're like, oh no, it's good to spend more money on a hospital. That's like a place of care. And so this next clip is during our campaign, we, you know, got in relationship with some rad healthcare professionals, and we're trying to organize among healthcare professionals because the expansion seems like it would serve them, more staff. They wanted to do things to make the hospital like safer for staff, including making it more like a prison, so like hardening the nurses' stations, putting glass around them or plexiglass around them to keep them safe from the patients. This next clip is one of our comrades, SYP, talking about her experience trying to talk to the nurses at Western State Hospital and what they thought of this expansion, thinking that maybe we could find some common ground, but that is not what ended up happening. I will roll clip unless you want to say anything else for context, Leah. No?
As part of finding people to sign on to this letter that we had written, I reached out to the union representative of Western State Hospital, who I won't say the name of her, but I contacted her through my union rep. So it was like through a long chain of union. And I think the union part is important because it is people who are really trying to fight for working conditions, which doesn't always map onto patient conditions, but often there is some sort of larger political awareness, at least about workers' rights, if not also about patient rights. And I think something that came to the forefront for me during that call is that I remembered that just like for me, that people who work in psych are people who've also been always, almost always, but I would say always personally affected by situations in their own lives. And I remember during that call, the union rep talked about being herself the child of someone who'd committed suicide after a lifetime of struggling with auditory hallucinations. She felt it was her calling to help others. She now felt she didn't have the resources and specifically the beds to do so. And that is just a story I've heard from so many people. And like, of course, you know, as even more background to like why I became a street medic or a crisis counselor, of course, it's because people in my own life who I love have died or been really impacted or been involuntarily hospitalized or tried to seek hospitalization and been turned away. So there's so many people who are working in psych who've also been impacted. And so I think that, as you all know, it's not surprising, but it's people like this union rep who feel like it is her lifeblood to be there, you know, this like deep higher calling. For a lot of nurses, it's spiritual or like religious, often Christian. It is savior in many, many ways. But I think when they encounter abolitionists who are talking about taking away these systems, it feels like a personal attack. And so I think that's how the call went down, which is exactly, honestly, how I expected it to. I was sort of hoping it would be different.
Yeah.
But I think what it felt like, as even a facilitator of the call, was someone who was trying to share a much larger value, also grounded in their own experience about abolition and psych, and somebody who felt like their life was like at threat because of it. And it just was really messy. It didn't go well. And there was no follow-up after that. But I think what it did for me was reveal just that deep chasm between people in this work. I think it can sort of map onto reform and abolition, but I think it actually goes deeper than that in some ways, because it's not like a values thing. It's really about people's own suffering. And for me, I still feel this way. And that's why I went into ER nursing, honestly, is because I still feel like I can try to be a bridge between those two worlds.
Wow. Thanks. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. We're talking today with Leah Montang and Meredith Ruff about their podcast, Incarceration, documenting their efforts at raising awareness around meaningful change in the prison, hospital, psychiatric care system in Washington State. So let's talk about that second piece, Meredith. What's going on here?
Yeah, so as part of the No New Washington Prisons campaign against the like $900 million expansion of Western State Hospital, one of the state's psychiatric hospitals, we were trying to build coalition around this to say, we don't want this money to go into this state hospital that's now going to be directly connected to the prison system. We would like these hundreds of millions of dollars to be spent on actual care.
Thanks. Leah, do you have anything that you'd like to add to this segment we just heard?
Yeah, I mean, what I think is really important about it is SYP makes this point that it's not just like a political question of reform versus abolition, but it's hits at this like real core, you know, spiritual, emotional level, right? And that's what we're grappling with when we're starting to think about prisons, sure, but hospitals and the question of care. So it's not just a matter of getting the political framing right. You know, it's going to take more than that, I think, to turn this, the direction our ship is, you know, is moving around. You know, when we, if we think of the people who are caught up in the cycle of jail, houselessness, psychiatric commitment, forensic commitment, surplus population, or people who are abandoned, people who are subject to what Gilmore calls organized abandonment, right? Like the solution to that can't be just more abandonment, right? It can't be like no care, you know? Because it's, yeah, I mean, it's a question of humanity. It's a question of like who we are as humans. And we live in this very, you know, isolated way, capitalist way, alienated way, but there is still this like fundamental interhuman connection, I think, that we're disturbing and we're disrupting when we're approaching this issue of care.
Yeah, that's really well put. Thank you. So let's get to the third segment, just because we only have a 28-minute show. I wish we could just talk forever about this because it's such an important issue. But yeah, let's hear the third segment. What is this segment going to be about?
Yeah, so this third segment is from somebody we were connected to through the campaign, Laura Vantosh, who has been like a long time advocate for, you can call it a couple different things, like patients' rights, peer rights, because Laura has been through this system. And not only was Laura committed at Western State Hospital, she then later worked at Western State Hospital in a role as like peer support. So we're going to listen to her talk about that.
25 years after I was a patient at Western State Hospital, I worked there. I thought it was hired to be the consumer affairs director. So I came back after a long history working in different kinds of programs and environments. And it was a lot to take in. The buildings were basically about the same. They'd done some kind of on the ward what's it called when you remodel? Remodeling took place, but the buildings were basically the same. The doors were basically the same. The locks were basically the same. I had a set of keys when I worked there. So that was sort of bizarre in a way to go on wards that I may have been a patient on and had a key. And also the feeling you would get when you logged yourself in and how that might feel, of, especially I always felt for the patients that when I left a ward and had to lock the door behind me, they didn't all automatically lock. I always felt that I was committing a crime, that I was locking people in. And I never really said that until now, to be honest with you, that I was committing a crime, but I kind of felt that I was doing something like that. That I never would want to lock other people in, but I had to because it was my job, that kind of mentality. Anyhow, I did do a lot of good in that job. Unfortunately, though, I was the only one that was kind of out of the closet in a very, over 2,000 staff. People were staff. There were about 1,000 people total. And I think that more could have been done if there weren't leadership changes and really disasters that happen at the hospital. No disasters with peer staff like myself, but just general issues that occurred that were really devastating to the system at large. And they never had other peers permanently in roles that they could have had. So I've always had kind of a bad taste in my mouth about the way the system is kind of, the way we let the state hospital fall to pieces.
Laura is someone who's been in this world, yeah, like Meredith said, of doing advocacy from the standpoint of someone who's been through the psych system and you know, continues to like grapple with that system for her, for herself, and navigate it for herself. But she also has been an advocate around what's now called peer support and peer rights, and thinking about how people who've been through the system are the like most important kind of healing factor for people who are facing mental health or behavioral health challenges. So that's one thing, is the importance of peers as part of the big message for Laura. And then this clip for us really highlights how harmful it feels to be locked up and then to be a peer who's then doing the locking up, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so feeling kind of the trauma and the harm from that from both standpoints. And part of the message that we need to work on as a movement is that the large institutionalized care systems that we are relying on, and I'm not just talking about institutions as in state hospitals, because a lot of the mental health care system in Washington state is like small privatized facilities, you know, throughout the state. But yeah, I mean, how traumatizing and harmful those experiences of being in those facilities can be, and the necessity of really working hard to build up alternative ways of providing care for one another. Meredith, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what we talk to people about is what could we build instead? What could we build that doesn't feel and look like this, that's not connected to coercion or institutionalization, that would be actually like more, certainly more life affirming, but like do the work that these hospitals pretend to do, you know, getting people better. How do we actually get people better instead of putting them in this system that feels like a jail?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much. So let's go ahead and share the final clip we have. We're talking with Meredith and Leah about their new podcast that's been out for a little bit called Incarceration, documenting and discussing alternatives to the hospitalization to a prison complex that exists in Washington State currently.
Yeah, so this last clip is just the demands of, if you know, the Shut Down King County Jail campaign. We talked to them, talked to a lot of different people. We did talk to people in jail, like that had been in jails. We talked to people who are currently incarcerated in prisons, but then we wanted to focus on this very specific campaign that happened in King County, and what they were asking for, like what are these things that we want.
Can I just, before we play the clip, just say a little bit about what was going on there? So the campaign was responding to a series of deaths that happened in the jail. There were 11 people that died in, I think, 2 years, 21 and 22, I think. And responding to also really unhealthy conditions that were in the jail during the COVID 19 pandemic and afterwards. And some of these unhealthy conditions had to do with overcrowding. And a lot of that overcrowding had to do actually with that logjam between the jail and the state hospital. And so there was a campaign to shut down the King County Jail, just like end the jail. The King County Commissioner Dal Constantine had it in 2020. Called for the jail to shut down at one point, said it would shut down. So the campaign was, you know, calling for him to keep his promise and shut the jail down. But it was also dealing with this solution to jail conditions that presented itself, which was to subcontract with another jail in South King County called SCORE, the South Correctional Entity, and to just rent bed space there in order to relieve overcrowding and unhealthy conditions. So there was the overarching demand to shut down the jail. And then we're going to play this clip where Patrice from the campaign talks about the other kind of non-reformist reform demands that go alongside it.
Stop jailing all people experiencing mental health crises and release those currently jailed. Prohibit police from seeking jail admission for those experiencing mental health crisis, and stop imposing bail, which only functions to hold poor people in this deadly facility. So I think those are just sort of the bullet points within the, you know, just shut down the jail and don't come back to us with ideas for expansion that are disguised as something else. So yeah, just shut down the jail, period.
Yeah, I think that what really struck us was how these non-reformist reforms that they're calling for, the first two of them really are about detaching jails and mental health care, right? If the interconnection of the criminal punishment system and mental health care systems is actually driving both of those systems to expand, let's, instead of saying build more jails, build more beds, you know, build more everything, let's say, let's actually try to detach those systems from one another in various ways. And that would be a really key demand, I think, in other places besides just King County in Washington State, but in every state. We had all kinds of other things we explored, especially in episode 6, you know, which I think we call that episode Care Otherwise.
Oh, one more time, can you let us know where can people find this podcast? What's the name of the podcast? And if they want to reach out to you to find out more information, how can they do that?
It's called Incarceration. You can find it on, you know, all the places where you listen to podcasts, you know, all of your podcast apps. We've got it up there widely. So it's in-care-ceration. You can also reach out to us through the No New Washington Prisons Instagram account.
Or nonewwashingtonprisons@gmail.com.
Great. Thank you so much. Leah, Meredith, it's been just a real pleasure having you on Prison Pipeline. This has been...
Thank you, Emma.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are